Hi, everybody. Thank you for joining us at Leeds Book Club for our latest podcast. We are joined today by Mark Catley, a screenwriter and playwright who is currently working at the West Yorkshire Playhouse on Sherlock Holmes' Best Kept Secret, which will be out, I believe, on the 18th of May until the 8th of June. Hi, Mark. Thank you very much for joining us.
That's all right. Thank you for coming.
Do you mind telling us a little bit about how you got started in this project?
Well, it was an unusual one because they approached me once they'd got a director and a production in place. So it's normally the writer that starts this ball rolling. But this time around, I think it was one of the producers that had seen, I think one of Nikolai Foster's productions, and thought it reminded them of Sherlock, and they thought he'd be the right person to do it. Mm. So I met Nikolai last June, I think it was June or July. And it was clear that he was approaching a few writers, and it was a job that I really felt I wanted, because I've been a massive fan of Sherlock all my life, and especially the TV show recently, really got me back into it.
The BBC Benedict Cumberbatch, yeah. Martin Freeman, yeah. It's fantastic.
It is. And I can sort of see the commercial aspects of it as well. And so I really wanted it, so I sat up the night after and just came up with the story that we're doing today, and just kind of made it so Nikolai couldn't say no. So I came up with like the strongest story I could.
Yeah.
And yeah, you went with it.
And you've set it in sort of the ether years, if I'm correct, after the Reichardt falls, but prior to his reappearance, because there's never any explanation of what happens in that.
No.
He just sort of disappears for a few years.
Well, Conan Doyle actually killed the character off, but then the fans were outraged, and they sort of put some pressure on him to bring him back.
Am I correct? People were wearing mourning. Some of them were putting on black
bands
and stuff.
It was enormous at the time. I'm trying to think what the equivalent is now, but I don't think there is one.
Probably Bieber or something
So they put pressure on him to bring him back, and he brought him back without any real explanation of what had happened at Reichenbach Falls. So obviously that felt a really clear place to start. So I imagined... I do go on to say what I think happened at Reichenbach Falls in this, and I can't give that away.
No, of course.
So it's sort of set, I think 2 years afterwards, we said roughly 2 years. Mm. It's all a bit vague with Conan Doyle, so I'm trying not to say anything specific myself. And Sherlock has given in. Whatever happened at the falls has caused him to stop investigating.
A bit broken.
Watson describes him as a shell of a man. He's sort of reignited when his brother Mycroft is arrested for treason.
He's one of my favourite characters within the Holmes universe, as it were.
The first idea I had was to use Mycroft, because I think Mycroft is an extension of Holmes himself.
Yeah.
And he's also a warning of where Holmes can go to if he's not careful. Because Mycroft, if you're thinking about this in modern parlance, he's like quite seriously autistic. From the description of him in the book, saying, he's more intelligent than Sherlock, but he's more withdrawn from society.
Yeah.
And for me, Watson is the difference between the two men.
That humanising force, keeping him on the straight
and narrow. Mycroft doesn't have that, so he just descends into his sort of autism and his genius nature. But Sherlock has got Holmes sort of anchoring him to the world. I knew I wanted to use Mycroft immediately.
And I would suspect, if you're a fan of the classic books, and I mean four novels and many, many more short stories, I think, do you contain the what I would always consider sort of the essential elements?
Yeah.
So there's a slight, almost gothic overtones. It's very Victorian. It has to be. The modern series, I think, have given us a beautiful new imaging of it. But for those of us who love the novels, there are motifs that we would hope to...
Yeah, we've set it in 1890.
The 1890s.
And it's very respectful to Conan Doyle's world. I don't contradict anything that he's said, and we acknowledge all the cases that have gone before this as well, and we mention them quite a lot as well. It's quite exciting when we mention sort of events at the time and people around at the time. I think Gladstone gets a mention, and Oscar Wilde and Jack the Ripper and stuff like that.
I was going to ask, actually, within a fictional world, how much real life research do you need to do to ground it in a realistic sort of setting?
I think the more you do, the more realistic the character himself feels. And I almost got confused myself thinking that Sherlock was real. at one point, because he is such a part of that world, and he's such a part of Victorian England, that he kind of feels real, anyway. So when you mention Jack the Ripper in this play, it doesn't feel out of place.
Out of place, yeah.
Totally feels like it, you know, it belongs together.
Yeah. And any other characters that you can let us know? I think I might have seen downstairs that Irene makes a reappearance. I find her a fascinating character, because as far as I'm aware, she's referenced in two stories. That's it. She's captured the imagination.
She appears in one story referenced in two. Mm-hmm. I think the thing is that that was the only time Sherlock has ever been faced with a female nemesis who you get the impression that he kind of liked as well, and respected her. And because he kept the portrait that she leaves him at the end of Scandal in Bohemia, you get the impression that
there's affection.
Yeah, there's affection there.
Yeah.
And for me, the interesting thing about writing a character like that is putting him in brand new situations. So putting him with his brother Mycroft, who's, you know, believes he's more intelligent than he is interesting. But then putting him in a situation where love is in the air is also interesting, especially for a character who's so awkward with anything human. Any human emotions, he can't really deal with it. It's a joy to write Irene and Sherlock together.
And Lestrade, I presume. Oh, Lestrade's
there. The one who's missing, and people will say something, is Mrs. Hudson. But she did. There was no real narrative for her in this particular story. We reference her a few times, but you never see her. But in terms of the central characters, we've got Mycroft, Lestrade, Irene, and there's a couple of other characters who are just known by their occupations at the moment. But they're kind of, you know, brand new characters.
Yeah.
Not from the existing world.
That must be very exciting, actually. And presumably the production now, it's coming out very, very shortly, less than a fortnight, I would say.
Oh, yeah.
Presumably you've had a few run-throughs now, you're getting to see it. Can you explain, I know you've been doing this for some time. In fact, I think downstairs I saw that the first thing you ever wrote, you acted in, and you were on stage when you heard the first laugh, and that it was quite a powerful feeling. But what is it like when you actually see something and characters that you've created brand new for that world, when you actually see them on the stage?
I sort of learned now not to have too many expectations of what it will end up looking like, because that can only lead to disappointment in yourself. But you sort of can't help it as well. You kind of, you know, you do picture it as it's going along. And quite honestly, the stuff that I've seen in the rehearsal room so far has exceeded my expectations. But also it's become something that I didn't realise it was. I always tend to write quite naturalistically and a little bit tongue-in-cheek with some dark humour. And all that's in there. But because it's Sherlock, because it's familiar characters and because it's Victorian England, they're playing it quite heightened. And it's quite big, it's quite, you imagine there's a bit of piano music going behind it. It's like
very dramatic.
Yeah, very dramatic. And that was a shock at first when I saw it like that. It's like, oh wow, I've never expected anything I've written to look this kind of heightened and dramatic. But it works so well. And Sherlock himself, Jason the actor, who's just throwing himself into it so much, he is absolutely manic. I've never seen a portrayal of Sherlock that's that crazy. You know, he's really gone there with him.
And Johnny Lee Miller and Benedict Cumberbatch have not played him as straight. That's quite interesting. Yeah. I'm looking forward now to seeing...
I imagine if David Tennant ever played Sherlock, he'd kind of do it in a similar, you know, manic style.
Geek hearts explode just at the thought.
But Jason's, he's fantastic. He brings such an energy to it. And it's brilliantly offset with Watson, Andrew Hall, who plays it very straight. You entirely believe he's a doctor.
Yeah.
Which, again, I'd not expected. But when you see Andrew doing it, it's like, oh yeah, he's a doctor.
Yeah.
You can imagine him coming around to your house, making house calls and all sorts of stuff. And he's very grounded. He is the straight man.
Because I think I'm so bad with names. Basil...
Rathbone.
I think it began with him. I know Watson was always a supporting character, and there's always been an element of comedy to it, particularly because there are moments where he slips into pomposity in his writing, particularly about his own romantic entanglements and things like that. But from those films onwards, he's become sort of a parody. I feel like Watson has become a bit of a parody of himself. So I like, with the more recent takes of it, he's regaining that companion sort of territory where he's not unequal in terms of deductive reasoning, but he's certainly superior when it comes to like interacting with the world around them.
Oh, totally. He is the sensible one, basically. He's the one who can talk themselves out of situations. It's good to see him with Irene now, because there is she's like the third wheel, and it really sets him off kilter. It puts Watson off quite a lot. All of a sudden, there's this other element in his relationship with Cheryl.
Which is a nice about face as well, because usually he's the one introducing Holmes to really awkward date conversations. Particularly well done, I think, in the recent Robert Downey Jr. film, where he like meets her and makes all these deductions, and they're totally right, but completely off kilter.
Yeah,
and
inappropriate.
highly inappropriate, I think. At what point do you think you'll relax? Is it not until the first night when you're actually sitting down and watching it? Is that when it goes out in the world, or
that'll be the worst? The worst thing for me actually is after the show, and people coming up and saying stuff. I'm not very comfortable with that. I think I'm maybe a bit Sherlock myself, a little bit socially awkward. But I love watching it because I love the reaction from the audience.
Mm.
Hopefully that'll be the case. Mm. It's positive.
Yeah.
But the difficult thing for me is afterwards, all the repeated conversations. You end up saying the same thing over and over again until you get sick of the sound of your own voice. I think a big part of me would rather just run away.
Well, I think a few writers that I've met, they said that one person, I think it was Chris Nixon, put it particularly well, where he says writers are the only people who don't like the sounds of their own voices.
Mm.
That's why they write. You write other people's stories and other people's tales so that you can have a bit of a step back from it.
There is something removed from the process. But I used to be an actor as well, so I must have liked the sound of my own voice at some point.
Well, even actors, I would argue, step into that rather than... I always have such admiration for stand-up comics because they're taking on their own persona and putting it out there, whereas at least with a role, if people don't like it, it was the writing.
Yeah.
You know, and the writers can go, the actor just didn't get it. Right, there's an element of forgiveness there.
Oh yeah, stand-ups are on their own.
So did you start as an actor or as a writer? How did you get into this?
I started as an actor, really. I joined a youth theatre in Leeds when I was about 18. And we devised our own material. So it was based on the stuff that we did. And we were a bunch of loonies from Beeston, South Leeds. And we'd make up stories about our love of Leeds United, the local YMCA getting closed down. You know, but quite universal things as well, you know, life, love, and all that. And it was from that I got a love of acting. But I kind of realised now, looking back, what I was actually doing was enjoying the creating of the material.
The whole process.
Yeah, the acting was like a bonus on top of it. So from that, I got encouraged to pack in my dead-end jobs and go back to college. And then went to Goldsmiths in London. And then came out of that a bit disillusioned with theatre, to be honest with you, because I found the degree really boring. And really, just wasn't for me. I should not have done an academic degree. It wasn't really where I was at. And came out of it a bit disillusioned, but managed to get a bit of acting work back in Leeds. And then the writing just started to take off. I'd written a play for my dissertation at university, and dug that out about a year later and gave it to Mike Kenny, the writer. And he passed it on to a theatre company. They ended up putting it on. And that was the play I was in when I was saying I was backstage listening to the laughter. And then someone approached me after that and says, would you write this for us? Would you write that for us? And eventually led to the Playhouse a few years later.
Mm. And you've quite a long-standing relationship now with the West Yorkshire Playhouse.
Yeah, it's 10 years now, I think. Over 10 years. It's been brilliant. And there was a big gap. There was about 6 years in between where I didn't do anything yet. And that was because TV had sort of taken over. And once you get into that, it's very difficult to do anything else.
And I can't imagine that, like, a play like this is very personal because everybody that's there, if you're up there, you can see the reactions, you can see how the audience are responding.
Mm.
But television, I mean, it's a totally different field. Yeah. It's.
I mean, I always say with TV, I prefer writing television because I'm more familiar with it. I think I was brought up with TV as the babysitter. But I don't like it. You know, watching the episode is quite a strange thing.
Well, you know how it's going to end.
Yeah, I know. But Twitter is kind of good. Because you do start to get immediate feedback now.
Oh, yeah.
That is almost like...
There's a lot of live viewing going on there.
Look, you know, watching the audience watch it. And it's very funny, because what you want is people to quote back your lines. That's what you're after. You're looking for lines that are strong enough for people to quote. And for that to sort of peak on Twitter. Because I did... The most recent thing I had on television was Youngers, which is an E4 show.
Yeah.
And there was a couple of lines in that I was really happy with, and I was desperate.
To see if they connect.
To see if Twitter would connect with it, and they did. So it's getting, because it's getting better, this TV.
Mm.
You can see a reaction to a certain extent, but nothing like theatre.
I have to admit, I'm really excited when I found that you'd been writing for Call the Midwife.
All right.
My mum and I, my parents are still in Ireland, and I've been over here for 11 years. We kind of watch it together. We're texting each other it's on, going through each of the characters and arguing over whom our favourites are. I'm very much on Chummy's. I relate a lot to Chummy, so that's quite exciting. But that's a huge phenomenon. How did you get involved in that? Do you submit, or is it more that people approach you, having seen stuff that you've done previously?
Yeah, they approached me, which was good. We've been working for Casualty for 5 or 6 years. I've done about 22 episodes of Casualty over the years, and in the books of Call the Midwife, I mean, unfortunately the author passed away relatively recently.
Yeah. 2008 or 9, I guess.
And they had no more stories, but they had a second series. They used up all the stories for the first series and the start of the second series, so they wanted somebody who could generate medical drama, and I think I'd written about 5 births for Casualty up until that point, so I was quite au fait with it. And so, yeah, they wanted...
We need the baby writing guy.
Yeah, they did. They wanted someone who was comfortable with medical drama and generating medical drama stories. Mm. And because I was a producer at Casualty, we did a lot of story production, a lot of generating of stories. So.
And Casualty, as a show in its own right, it's not been afraid to test the boundaries of that. And one of my favourite shows was the Casualty 1906 series that they did.
Yeah.
They did 1906, 07 and 09, I think.
Yeah.
And it was very strange, because it has the same, I suppose, the same tone as Casualty and the same pace to an extent, but it's a totally different landscape that you're working with. As an audience, you almost feel like you're better informed than some of the doctor, you're seeing them doing stuff, we don't do that anymore.
Yeah. But then it might end up just going back to that now.
Yes.
Modern Casualty might end up resembling Casualty 1907.
It does feel like it's heading in that direction, rather scarily. Can you tell us whether you'll be involved in the upcoming series of Call the Midwife at all?
I won't. I was offered it, and I have to confess, I loved writing the show, and it's been hugely beneficial. I got so many job offers after my episode went out, it was unreal.
It was nearly 9 million people viewed it just tonight.
Yeah,
that's before they take into account any of the DVRs or BBC Play players.
It's over 10 million when they finished. It's insane to think of that many people watching it. But
is that a sixth of the that's a sixth of the country, isn't it?
I think so, yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
1 in 6 people in the Great Britain have seen your episode.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I don't.
Well done, you.
But the problem is, the show isn't necessarily my best fit. I need to enjoy immensely what I'm writing, because you're going to do 7 or 8 drafts of this script.
Mm.
So you've got to make sure you love the stories and you love the characters. And I don't think I'm necessarily the target audience of Call the Midwife. It's not something I think that I'd probably watch, given a choice. Obviously, I watch all medical drama now because of what I do for a living, but that's more necessity than entertainment. So I had to weigh up how beneficial it would be to do another episode against other opportunities that were out there.
And if you've spent the better part of 8 years writing medical dramas, I suppose it needs to be a different spin.
Yeah.
At this point, keep you.
And I'm still I'm still working with Casualties and Advisor as well, so. Mm. Yeah, I don't want to overload or just do medical drama. I don't think that'll do me any good in the long run anyhow. So I'm trying other things now. So I wrote Youngers this year. I'm currently writing for My Mad Fat Diary, which is another E4 show, which is fantastic. I love the first series. And then there's a BBC Action, sort of a new Sweeney or Professionals coming up in a couple of years' time, which I'm working on, which I can't say any more about, unfortunately.
So you've just mentioned sort of 7 or 8 drafts. We're looking at an hour of television.
Yeah.
How long, for you, I realise it's different for all different sort of writers, but roughly how long a process does it take to generate an hour of television, or a play of two and a half hours?
It's weird, because editorial of any play or TV show is fluid.
Mm.
It will fill whatever space you have. So if you have a lead time of 8 months, it will take you 8 months to write that. You'll still be writing as it goes on.
And if you're given six weeks?
If you're given 6 weeks, you'll do it in 6 weeks. Mm. And there's a weird thing that I've realised after 10 years of writing. The quality isn't much different between the two things.
Yeah.
Despite with the 8 month lead time, you could end up doing double figures drafts and just arguing over everything. But you'll always, as long as the editorial team is strong, you'll always end up with the strongest story, which you probably got round about the second or third draft, to be honest with you. And they've gone round about the houses to realise, oh yeah, that was the best way of telling this story.
Mm.
So yeah, it's fluid. Ideally for me, it's 3 months.
And how much? And once the baby is gone, sold it off. How much control do you actually? I mean, do you write in that it is as is? Presumably, there's an element of flexibility. There will be lines or characters that have to change for just through circumstances.
Yes, yeah. With theatre, it is pretty much like that. It is, the writer gets their say in most things, which is fantastic. In TV, it's the opposite, unfortunately.
Thanks very much. Bye now.
Yeah, see you later. Thanks. It depends. I mean, when I was in with Casualty, I was on like my 20th episode, then they respected my opinion a lot.
Mm.
So, I'd get control over the edit and the final say and all that sort of stuff. But with something like Call the Midwife, no, not at all.
No.
I mean, one of the reasons I'm not going back is that two of my favourite scenes just weren't even in there by the end of it. And no one had said anything. And when it went out, I was like, well, where's that? Where's the end of that scene? What's gone on? And it was it's quite soul-destroying after spending 6 or 7 months working on something and pouring your heart into it, to see that they couldn't even bother to ring you up and say, by the way, we've not even filmed that.
Anymore. Yeah.
We didn't have time whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Budgetary restraints
So that can be annoying, but you do learn to live with it. I mean, Youngers as well, I barely recognised the first episode of it. There was a lot of changed lines and stuff.
Mm.
It's one of them things. But bizarrely, they pay you, because you've been on TV, you probably get paid 3 times what you get paid in theatre.
Mm.
And they pay you to, so you have less of a say.
At the end of the day.
So they pay you to say, stop complaining.
Mm.
Here you go. Whereas with theatre, because, you don't necessarily get a living wage from writing a piece of theatre.
Mm.
I think if you went out on an hourly rate, you'd be on less than minimum wage.
With your writing, do you write novels, like pure fiction, or no. Is it all with the dramatic element?
I don't have a novel in me, I don't think.
They say everybody has one.
No, I don't. I don't know. That's why I said that. The only novel I'd have in me is about writing theatre and TV, I would imagine.
Mm.
It would be an autobiography.
And what about heading to the big screen?
I've never had a plan. Mm. I'll go wherever,
Yeah.
I've just tended to go where the wind blows me, so if it ends up there, then great. But if not, I'm very happy with what I've done so far. So if this is the pinnacle, then that's absolutely fine by me.
Well, one of my favourite writers, directors, producers, everything is Joss Whedon. And I'm an addict.
Yeah.
I am a total addict. I have the original film on VHS. I was an early initiate.
Ah.
But I know he didn't recognise the final product. That's why one of the reasons why he did the TV series was he was so heartbroken by what they had done to his film.
Mm. You've got even less control in film.
Mm.
Again, the increase in money equals the lack of control over the end product, which is just bizarre.
I gather in that case there's actors that had enough cred that they were able to steamroll over.
Yeah, and say what they wanted.
Which I imagine would happen a little bit less in theatre, actually, because...
Oh, in theatre, no. I mean, the cast of Sherlock, if they've changed a line, they'll tell me.
Mm.
Changed a word.
Yeah.
They'll say, am I right to say good God here before I say that? Of course you are. Say what you want, really. Well, as long as it sounds good, I don't mind.
Yeah.
The film world isn't something I'm in a rush to get into.
But if it happens...
If it happens, it happens, yeah. Yeah. What I would like is more control with the TV and the theatre stuff that I'm doing. Mm. I'm looking at going to producing. I think that's the way forward. If you don't want anyone to mess with your stuff, then you've got to be the person who does the messing.
Around, yeah. And you can't blame anybody then for taking out your favourite line but yourself.
Absolutely, yeah.
If you, is there anything currently on the television that you're looking at and you're just going, I'd give my left arm to write, well, unless you're left-handed.
I think Sherlock is the best thing on television at the moment. Although, ironically, I'd say a third of the output of Sherlock I don't like. I've always liked the first episode, the last episode. The middle episode of on both series, I thought, what was that?
Yeah.
I just did not.
I think I did the same with them. I really have to tackle this name issue I've got. Channel 4, what was it called? Charlie Brooker's Black Mirror.
Oh, Black Mirror, yeah.
I was exactly the same with that. For each of the two series, two out of the three episodes, I was, fantastic. They should be made into movies right now. And then there was a woman going, didn't get it.
Yeah.
Just didn't get that at all.
Yeah, it's. I have no idea what creates that phenomenon. I hope it doesn't happen on the third series. But yeah, there's that. I love sitcoms as well. I mean, I always have had. I still watch, if Porridge is on now, I'll watch it or anything else.
Yeah.
So I'd love to write a sitcom. Big Bang Theory is probably the one that I watch the most. You know, we make a point of sitting down and watching that every week when it's on.
How I Met Your Mother?
No, don't like it.
Not at all.
Don't get it either. I hope, because you take Big Bang Theory, you always get the last 2 minutes of How I Met Your Mother. And I don't understand the format. And people have explained it to me as well. I'm like, I still don't get how it works for that many series.
Yeah.
I don't understand how you...
Like Neil Patrick Harris has an awful lot
to do.
Yeah,
I imagine.
He's amazing as an actor. And,
And
Dr. Horrible.
Yes.
Is there anything that you would go, no, I get too much enjoyment out of watching it, wouldn't write for it, it's my pleasure, not a job?
All right. I've never thought about that before. There's a weird thing about TV drama where it feels like work to me now when I'm watching it. So I approach it in a different way.
Everything's a potential project.
Yeah, exactly. Everything is, I'd like to write for that. Nothing springs to mind. I mean, bizarrely, since I've been writing television, I'm less of a television watcher.
Yeah.
I'm much more picky about what I watch for entertainment.
Because
quite often, you know, it'll spark ideas as well. You end up sitting up till 2 o'clock in the morning, thinking about, you know, spin-off versions of stuff. But I mean, no word of a lie, the greatest TV show ever for me is Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And it's the thing that I quote in every meeting, is that notion of a central gang with a conflicted hero. That's something I want to do for British drama. Or, you know, not copy it, but take that template and use it for British drama. And I've been trying to do that since I started writing. So I think, you know, a show... I would like to do the British Buffy. Obviously not with vampires. Possibly not with a schoolgirl at the front of it either.
I think Being Human, I felt, was quite a very...
Yeah.
A very British take. I find it very ironic that there's now an American version of it, which is a bit more Buffy and supernatural-esque than the UK Being Human, but I thought they did cover that. It was a beautiful show, but I would have loved Ripper. I would have loved to have seen Giles bumbling around, falling through old castles, and you know.
That would have been fantastic.
That would have been pretty cool.
Yeah, I still want to see his intentional end for Angel.
I know. Oh, sorry.
That annoys me.
But the fandom is totally split as well. You either loved it or hated it.
Yeah.
And I think it depends on whether you were originally a Buffy fan. Because if you're a Buffy fan in general, you hated the ending of Angel.
Yeah.
Because it wiped out the ending of Buffy.
Yeah.
But if you were an Angel fan first and foremost, you're like, it's the greatest era of television. I was like, yeah.
No, I didn't.
I liked the dragon.
Yeah.
That was quite good. Do you read the comics at all? Are you a comic fan at all?
I started to read the Buffy. I am a massive comic fan. I read graphic novels as research, to be honest. I'm not a massive novel reader. I've been doing a World War I drama, and there's this British comic called Charlie's War, which is from like Battle and Eagle. And that was amazing research. I much prefer reading graphic novels or anything else. So I got into the book, the follow-on Buffy ones, and it didn't really engage me that much.
No, I'm actually preferring season 9 to season 8. Because right. Season 8, Joss has said it himself, Joss, because I know him, you know. But they, I think the team around it, they said they were so excited that they could do anything. Yeah. And then they were going, yeah, but it doesn't feel like us anymore. So they've pared it back, and it's an awful lot more about the core characters, which I do like.
Yeah, it was plot over character that... When I was reading it, it was too plotty.
Oh, yeah.
And the characters weren't developed enough.
No. And there were a few, I think there were a few missteps as well with regards to our primary heroine's love interests that really bugged me.
The guy who taught me how to structure TV dramas, a guy called John York, who's written a book now about it, but he was the head of the BBC Writers Academy, and he was on set of Once More With Feeling. When they were filming it.
Oh my god!
He was doing a lot of BBC executives go over to America and watch how they do it.
Mm.
And he was on the set for that whilst they were filming.
That must have been amazing.
I do still quiz him about it now.
I know it sounds like I'm not doing anything, but I'm actually cartwheeling around the room right now in sheer jealousy and spite. Yeah. I actually go to sci-fi cons and I got to meet Drusilla and James and Juliet, which was, and they're incredibly giving, but something that everybody that I've met from the Whedon stable, they have a very, and almost a very intellectual, nobody goes in and just acts. Right. They want to know the psychological motivations and the reasons why, and they brought so much, when they do their talks and stuff, they give so much back to the...
Right.
Fans, it was absolutely amazing. But the thought that they put into it, in no way do they just get a script and recite it. They agonise over how to portray this and
that's good.
So impressed. The
lot in Sherlock are very similar to that. Because I've put in a few gags, and I admit they're just gags.
Mm.
And they're not necessarily in character. They're not even necessarily based on what's just happened to that character. And they're the bits that they'll go, I just can't get into this, and part of me just wants to say, well, just forget you being Watson for now, and just say that line. just sell that gag for us. But when you've got good actors with intelligence and sort of respect of the material, they're the guardians of it, and they'll look after it for you. Mm. And you kind of feel, I don't really go into rehearsals. I stay up here and do all the work, and if they need me to look at stuff, I'll go down and have a look.
Give you a holler.
I've not.
Presumably, you and the director have worked out a vision, and he's doing that side of it.
I don't know if we have. we knew what we wanted from the start, and we've just kind of gone on with it, and taken the next step when it's come along without. Yeah, I'm presuming he knows what he's doing. But I've no idea what it's going to look like.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Mm.
And I can't wait to see it.
And will you do the dress rehearsal thing, or are you waiting for the opening night?
No, I'll do the dress rehearsal. And I tend to get fed up with it after press night. So I'll watch it maybe 4 times before press night. And then press night will obviously be hopefully exciting. And then I'll probably just hang about outside rather than going in to see it. When I've got people coming to watch it, I'll just wait at the bar.
So you mentioned that you're a local lad,
mm.
and obviously you've been away to study and presumably to work, but you're back.
Oh yeah, I never really left. I did university for 3 years, and I stayed there a year afterwards, and that's it, I moved back to Leeds.
Mm.
And even though I've worked in Bristol with Casualty and London with all the other shows, I've never been tempted to move.
This is home.
Yeah, yeah. Plus, it'll make it work more if you're near them. It takes me 2.5 hours to get to work if I've got to work in London. That's enough time to relax and chill out, and
I think there was a perception of maybe a decade or so ago that the North was somewhat culturally barren.
Oh, that,
I
that,
certainly
that,
argue that that is not the case nowadays. I mean, it just seems to be a very vibrant scene here.
It's not. I've never believed it to be, but that perception still exists, unfortunately.
There's still now.
I face it on a weekly basis. Yeah. The amount of people who said to me, oh, you've got Harvey Nicks in Leeds. If the next person says that, I'm going to actually swing.
They're surprised.
Yeah, they're surprised. And
do they know how retail works?
They think they think that that's the pinnacle of what a northern city could be. Oh, as long as you've got Harvey Nicks, you'll be okay. And there was a guy who was trying to be complimentary. He was talking about a brand new writer.
In The Guardian?
New talent from Leeds, yeah. And it wasn't actually from The Guardian, it was the company that does the nominations, because I did that. I started slacking off the Guardian. And
like, no, the Guardian. Actually, I'm a Guardian girl, so I was more like, who wrote that piece?
It's not allowed in my house. Liberal nonsense. Anyway, so they described this guy as coming from Leeds, which was completely out of the...
devoid of any culture. There was some phrase like that. I was staggered. And it was the same week I was organising all my World Book Night events, and I knew the whole city was going crazy to participate. Yeah. And
unfortunately, I wasn't staggered, because I work with these idiots on a daily basis, and they really do never, ever step outside of London. And, you know, they believe London to be the centre of the universe, as opposed to what it is, which is actually a separate country to England.
Mm.
And one that's...
And one not inhabited, as far as I can tell, by any English people.
No.
Every time I go through, I'm always very impressed by the colour and the fact that nobody will wear colour. It must be black, you know.
Yeah.
The heels, the size of the shoes. But, yeah, I've never met an English person down there. They're all Australians or South Africans or, you know.
Yeah. And in economy-wise as well, I think it takes away from, you know, the rest of the country quite a lot. Because, I mean, in London it really is. What recession?
Yeah.
They're all right. Everything's going really well.
Ireland suffers the same thing. We went mad for centralisation and then suddenly realised that actually there's a whole...
Yeah.
You know, rest of us that need work and jobs and for business to move out here in industry and stuff. So
see, I mean, I do think that to a certain extent my career has probably suffered from not living in London.
Mm.
There's certainly none of that schmoozing. Mm. I can't do any of that. I'm not very good at it anyhow, so it's not a bad thing. But I kind of think an artist should be true to wherever it is that they're from.
Mm.
Just in the hope that it will become regionalised again at some point.
Well, I suppose there's an element that if you're here, I dream
of working on a TV show that's actually set in Leeds.
Yeah.
That would be ideal.
I know, I mean, an awful lot of stuff at the moment is coming out of Cardiff.
Mm.
And that's relatively recent.
Yeah, I'm going there tomorrow, actually.
Oh.
I've never been to Cardiff, and I'm going to go tomorrow and see the new Casualty set. And hopefully sneak onto Doctor Who as well if I can.
I was just going to say, obviously, I wouldn't even dream of asking about the 50th if you were involved or anything in that. It's too secret even to throw up. But since Doctor Who and Torchwood, I think in particular, they seem to have moved an awful lot of production. I think it's the new Da Vinci Demons, I think, is being shot in Swansea.
Yeah.
That's a Starz production. It would be amazing to have something like that. An equivalent, you know, up here in Yorkshire. And
I mean, Salford will hopefully become the sort of Cardiff success story, because they are moving a lot of production there, and hopefully that will have a knock-on effect with, you know, Newcastle, Leeds, Sheffield, places like that. But, you know, I can say this. I'm working on a BBC project. I won't give too many details. It's set in Bradford, it's about Bradford, and nobody from Bradford is working on it. At all.
At all?
No. And it's all a London crew being brought up to shoot it. London actors, London everything. And you just kind of think we're never going to move forward.
And we're right beside the BBC Yorkshire now. There's an ITV right here. You kind of feel, heck, Emmerdale.
Well, that's like,
you know, there are teams here that are...
Yeah.
That could be involved, you know. It's.
But that's, you know, that's sort of where the productions come from. So the more regionalisation we can get, the better.
Mm.
You know, if there was a BBC Yorkshire, then they'd have dealt with that. And it would have been.
Yeah.
You know, it would have been artists and crew from up here.
Mm.
So, I mean, more power to Cardiff, really. Because I know it's the case there. You know, a lot of the people that are working on Casualty now, from Cardiff and from Wales. And that's the way it should be.
Well, I think it's actually an international phenomenon. I've noticed there's an awful lot of... actors that I've been watching for many, many years, they've all gone back home to Canada. Yeah. They've started to make television shows there because, you know, they've done the LA thing, they've done the New York thing, they've run away, made success stories of themselves and then gone, it's an awful shame we're not doing this where I grew up, where, you know, and it is gas, like watching a show actually set in Vancouver because you're going, but I've seen all of those streets from the X-Files, from everything, you know, Terminator, but all of the TV series that were there. So there does seem to be a desire to bring local voices back rather than just having it all be...
It relies on the artists themselves, though.
Mm.
You know, the more often Patrick Stewart and Christopher Eccleston and people like that, John Sim, come back up here and work.
I think that was my favourite line from the initial Doctor Who. And Billy Piper says, how come you sound like you're from North? And he went, every planet has a North. I thought it was just spot on, you know. Anyhow, sorry, I feel like I've been rambling on here, but it was such a pleasure to meet you. Thank you so much for chatting with us, Mark. I can't wait to see the play. I am a Sherlock fan as well. I won't approach you. I'll tweet about it once it starts.
I want to know what you thought of it afterwards.
Oh, definitely, Anna, and it's just terrific to have you here. And obviously, next time that you're doing anything up here, expect me knocking on the door.
So. No problem.
Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.